Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we catch up with Bewilderbeast from Canberra, listen to highlights from the ACT Cache of the Year, and part one of our special on wheelchair geocaching. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to the belated episode 10 of GeoTalk. Sorry I've been away for the last few weeks, but unfortunately had a few problems technically with a laptop that decided, well, it just wasn't going to behave anymore, and it's been in the shop, but I've been told that it should be back in my hands very soon. So this episode is actually being put together on a completely different piece of software that I've never used before, and hopefully it will all come out sounding at least okay. And thank you to all the emails that I've received over the last few weeks asking where I am. Everything's fine. I did, however, spend a week and a half in New Zealand, which was a really great experience. Unfortunately, didn't get to catch up with any geocaches while I was there, but did get to see some fantastic locations, and might do a bit of a highlight package in a few weeks' time. Also, just to let you know that in a few weeks' time, we're putting together two new episodes of GeoTalk Video Edition, thanks to Wingnut and WebGuy, who took me out into the Blue Mountains again, and we've put together two videos, and they should be released in the next few weeks, and we'll have some audio highlights from those as well. And thank you also to the contributions that we've received for that. Finally, a bit of a plug for a competition that the podcast over in the United States is running. Cachemaniacs will be running a competition where they're giving away an iPod or a couple of Fisher Space Pens. So listen to the promo in the middle of this episode and check out their website at cachemaniacs.com. And you'll also hear me in a few weeks' time. They spoke to me, Daryl and Adrian. We had a bit of a chat last weekend, and I'll be featuring in one of their podcasts fairly soon. So enough of me chatting away, it's time to get into Geocacher Profile. Well, I'm here on a crisp autumn evening in Canberra, and I'm sitting here with Peter, also known as Bill Wildebeest. How are you going?
Very good, thanks, Dan.
Now, before we get too much into it, please tell me, how did you come out with your name?
Well, Bill Wildebeest is a nickname that my wife gave me. It's a nickname between the two of us. Goes back many years. I can't really remember exactly how it got started. Just a bit of confusion over something that was going on. And a bit of a personal nickname. And it was one that was an original one that wasn't already taken by another geocacher. So it was a good one to pick.
And you're not the only one in your family that goes geocaching, are you?
No, my wife is Super Jazz. She goes geocaching as well. Where we can, we get out together with the kids as well when the opportunities come up, when we can convince the kids that there's going to be treasure at the end.
Now, you weren't the first one to get involved in it, were you?
No, my wife Jazz actually found out about the geocaching from another hobby she was involved in, and she decided it sounded interesting. Borrowed a GPS, piled us all in the car, and off we went to find a couple of geocaches. The kids loved it because it was treasure at the end, you know, they could get some swaps. And I went along, you know, I wasn't that into it to start with. I just sort of went along just to be with the family and join in, that sort of thing. And Jazz actually, she gave me a bit of a ribbing about it. She said, you know, this GPS, it's a gadget, you know, you're a guy, you're a gadget, you'll get into it, you know, you'll get hooked. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to get hooked on this, it's, you know, it's okay, but I'm not into bushwalking that much. Eventually what happened was we had a DNF on a cache, a bit of a tricky one, a very tiny micro that we couldn't find. And I was determined not to let this beat me. So I took a day off work and I decided, well, if I'm going to find this cache, there's no point finding it if I can't log it. So I created my own account on the geocaching site, and I took a day off work and I went looking for this thing and I found it. So I was pretty chuffed, so I logged my find and then decided, well, that was pretty good, I wouldn't mind doing a couple more. And because she'd ribbed me a bit about getting hooked on geocaching and I'd said I wouldn't, I didn't tell her to start with that I'd create an account. I kept geocaching for about 2 or 3 weeks after that. I'd sneak out of work at lunchtime, you know, using Google Earth to try and find the spots and that sort of thing. And just occasionally, if I could, I'd grab the GPS when I didn't think she'd notice. And after 2 or 3 weeks, I had to confess to her, look, yeah, I'm hooked, I'm into it. And she just laughed.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did it go down with her?
Yeah, she got a good laugh out of it then.
So do you go caching together as a group all the time, or do sometimes you go separately?
Not all the time. It's a good, fun family activity when we can talk the kids into it. They're 8 and 5, so they're a bit hot and cold on it. Where we can, we like to get out, you know, with the family, get a bit of outdoors, fresh air, that sort of thing. In between times, sometimes during the week in the evenings, one of us will go out, one of us will stay home with the kids, and we alternate. It's a good way of giving each other a bit of a break from their parenting roles as well, which is something I think is important for couples, you know, get a bit of a break sometimes and a bit of time to yourself. But just occasionally we've taken the day off work at the same time, gone out to do some of the more challenging ones that are a bit too tough for the kids. Some of the more interesting ones and that sort of thing. We just do the two of us when we can.
So you get a good variety of caching experiences, both with and without the kids?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, like I said, we try and find the more interesting or challenging ones that we can do, but then find the ones where you've got a good-sized container with some swaps and that perhaps just in the park and are fairly accessible for the kids, but not too much walking to tire them out. So, yeah, we get a good range, I think.
Is there a bit of competition between you and Jazz as to, you know, how many finds you've got?
No, not at all. She started before me. She's got a head start. And, you know, because most of our caching's done together, there's not much of an opportunity to catch up. And she's started studying this year, so she thinks she'll have less time for caching. So she doesn't expect to log as many as I will this year.
Do you find you're spending more time outdoors because of geocaching?
Definitely, yeah. I've also actually found it very good. I've done a couple of business trips over the last 6 months or so, and it's been a good way to get out the places I've been travelling to get out and see a bit of the place and perhaps see a few places I wouldn't have seen. You know, it's good to see the ones that are at the monuments and the memorials and landmarks, but you also get taken to a few unusual different places that, you know, your average business traveller or tourist might not know about.
What are some of your favourite caches, particularly here in the Canberra ACT region?
That's a good question. One of my favourites was one of the first ones I did called The Breather, which I think is actually currently disabled, unfortunately. A couple of other good ones are 8 Ball, which is on the lake, and that was a good adventure getting that one.
In fact, you mentioned to me earlier tonight that you spent a bit of time in a kayak with your wife hunting down a couple on Lake Burley Griffin.
Yeah, we did 3 caches that morning. Took us 3 hours, hired a kayak, and yeah, spent the whole morning on the lake. That was a good trip. That was a lot of fun.
Was that your first time in a kayak?
It wasn't my first time in a kayak, but for both of us, that was our first 5-star terrain cache. So, yeah, that was good.
And so any other memorable caches in the region?
Well, Level With Me is a favourite. I, you know, had no idea that that particular piece of artwork was there. ACT Phoenix, which is at the Bushfire Memorial. It's just a great spot to visit, I think. Yeah, and if you're probably the most challenging one I've done was one called Lost French Tourist, which has got a number of waypoints in town, takes you to a number of tourist-type attractions and interesting places, and then finishes with a reasonably tough hike at the end, bit of a bushwalk up a fairly steep hill to actually find the cave. So that one's a pretty good one with a bit of a mix of what you get.
So are you local Canberra?
I actually grew up in Queanbeyan and moved to Canberra when I got a job here. So I'm local, yeah.
So are there any places that geocaching has taken you that you've thought, wow, I never thought that existed in the region that I grew up?
Yes, definitely in Canberra. I mean, I've been living in Canberra for nearly 20 years now, and there's quite a few places it's taken me to that I just had no idea these things were there. One that springs to mind is a Landcare Memorial Grove in the northern suburbs that I didn't know was there, and we went out there to find a cache. And as we walked up, we went, wow, look at all those trees. They're all in straight rows. What's all that about? And stuff like that. So, yeah, all sorts of things.
Being one of the newer members, because you've been geocaching, you're saying, for about 6 months, what impression do you get of some of the older caches, like the S's and Thomas S and so forth?
Well, certainly in the case of Thomas S, I'm a bit in awe of the achievement to have found so many caches. I just, you know, where do you get the time? And it's just amazing. It's really good to hear some of the stories some of the people who've been around for a while have got, and some of the things that went on in the early days, and the way the sport's changed over the last few years. And it sounds like it has changed a bit and got a bit more regulated. And so it is good to meet these people and get some stories, definitely.
You're at the ACT event of the year cache recently. What do you think of event caches?
Well, that was the first cache we'd been to, and that was great fun for us. It was good to meet other caches, as I said, and swap some stories and hear some experiences. The kids enjoyed going along and meeting other people, and we also had a lot of fun with the game on the day. So it was just a good afternoon, and gave us a feel-good feeling at the end. It was also combined with a cache in trash out event. So we cleaned up a couple of bags of rubbish on our way out, and that was a good way to finish.
Where do you see yourself in geocaching? Do you see it as a long-term thing that you'll continue going, or are you waning slightly at the moment?
Well, I think after a bit of an initial flurry, it's slowing down a little bit to a slower and steady pace of finding them. But it's something I can see that you can keep at for many years, and just when the opportunities come up, times come up, that sort of thing, to pick up a few caches. And as I said, when travelling, whether it's for work or for something else, take the GPS and just go and find a few of those different sort of spots and see places in a way that you wouldn't otherwise see them.
On behalf of everyone listening, thanks very much for joining us, Peter.
Well, thank you very much, Darren. It's a pleasure.
For most geocaches, getting to a cache is not that difficult a thing. Apart from finding a car park that's fairly close to your geocache location and then finding a path to get there, it's a bit of a no-brainer. But for some geocaches, there are other hazards and difficulties that they face when they're looking for a geocache. Recently I spoke to Catherine, also known as Wheelchair Access, about her experiences geocaching, and I started by asking her what makes the geocaching experience different for her.
A couple of years ago, I've been diagnosed with MS, and it's progressed to a stage where I can't walk anymore. So I'm resigned to moving myself around in a wheelchair.
So why did you get into geocaching?
Well, initially it was my husband got into geocaching through his friend, and he's now quite mad about it. And for me, it was a case of can't beat him, join him. I just wanted to be able to talk to him about something that interests him and wanted to share his interest.
And how do you find geocaching, getting out and about in a wheelchair?
Well, obviously it's not something I can do on my own. I can't just get myself out alone unless it's something close by. I have an electric scooter that I can go to, but I'm limited as to distance. Other than that, I usually go out with Unza, my husband. What I generally do is I help him with the navigation and the comments and the likes, and if it's a puzzle of some sort, I try and help him with solving it and keep track of all the questions for any multis and that kind of stuff. I guess you could say I don't actually go out there and find the caches themselves, because most of them I wouldn't be able to, but I help them in other ways.
Do you find that you get out more because of geocaching?
Yes, I think I do. There's many times when I just don't feel like going and says, come on, let's go somewhere. And it's just nice to get out of the house now and again, and I find that there's so many places I get to see now that I could never get to see when I was able-bodied.
What are some of the caches that you find are quite rewarding for someone who's in a wheelchair, and those that you find are quite difficult?
What I like is things like virtual caches, where you just need to drive to a place and do some research and answer some questions, or certain puzzle caches where once again you need to do some research. That's where I can do a lot, either from home or just general knowledge. Event caches, that sort of thing. I can't really find many caches physically myself because, like I said, it's not just not that possible for me to get right next to a cache in most cases.
So how do you determine which caches you're going to go hunting for? Do you filter for those that do use the wheelchair attribute?
I do try, but I find that in a lot of cases that the wheelchair attribute applies mainly to getting to the area itself, but not to the cache. So you have a cache hidden somewhere in a park. You have a wheelchair attribute to it, but mainly it means that you can get into the park, but not right up to the cache itself.
So how could people who wanted to set up geocaches, particularly for those who are in wheelchairs, what could they do to make sure that you get the maximum benefit out of it?
Well, there would need to be somewhere at a level where a person in a chair or a wheelchair could access it. It needs to be close to a path, preferably on a fairly even terrain, because obviously when you're in a wheelchair, it's not very easy to get to somewhere where there's rocks and things. Just need to think how you would access it yourself if you were in a sit-down position.
Have you actually hidden any caches yourself?
Yes, I have hidden quite a few caches myself. Most of them, the actual hiding itself is done with someone's assistance because there just isn't that many places where it can be hidden by me, not in the whole area. A lot of puzzle caches and that sort of thing I like to set up because, well, it's fun for me and it's fun for others too.
Well, look, thanks very much for giving us a little bit of an insight into geocaching for yourself and I hope that you find many more in the future.
I hope so too.
Hey, GeoTalk listeners, I'm Firefly03 with Daryl W4 of the Cache Maniacs podcast. We want to let you in a little early about a contest we're kicking off on April 7th.
We'll have a few really cool prizes for this contest, and all we can really say for now is that you'll want to get your best geocaching stories together as soon as you can. Just listen to episode 15 for information about the contest.
That show will also feature the interview we recorded with Sunny and Sandy of the Podcacher podcast. You can find our show at cachemaniacs.com.
In March 2007, the Canberra region held their fourth annual Geocache Awards. Sean and Susan from the S's catch up with a couple of the winners and other attendees at the event.
I'm here with Thomas at the ACT Caching Awards, and Thomas has just won Cache of the Year. Now, Thomas, how did you come up with a unique concept for the, without giving too much away, for the winning cache?
Well, I don't know. I guess I've always been thinking of something to do which is unique and a subtle sort of a hide. And I did actually think of that idea before, you know, I found the location. So I had the idea in my mind, and I thought to myself, well, these types of locations where this is hidden do appear in many places. And I went to a place where we always go, which is down by the lake, and I just searched around. And at first I thought, no, I don't want to, you know, do any vandalism to get this to see it work. You know, I don't want to dismember something and dismount something. And I saw these, you know, location where the, obviously the council had made a bit of a mistake, and it's just perfect.
Got any tips for other newbies coming into the sport that about placing a good hide and, you know, what you think makes a good hide?
Yeah, I don't know. My thoughts are that you, you know, you either choose a good location, and I expect that's getting harder now because the good locations are gone, and
obviously
there's a lot more caches, as you can see from this event, than we've ever had before. But there's still plenty of good locations, I'm sure. Or you have a good puzzle, you know, so that it's a decent puzzle to find it, or a decent multi-cache or something like that.
We're from Team Cursed Dagger, actually. This is Cursed Dagger here. We only started up, I don't know, back in December. Did a few here, did a few in New Zealand, and have been down ever since.
Yeah, fair enough.
Enjoying it immensely.
How'd you get into it?
It was a funny story, actually. Lee's mother was in Queensland, and they stumbled across one on the backside of a cliff edge. Found this silver cylinder, opened it up, found out it was geocaching, came back from there to visit us in Canberra and told us all about it. So
that's how we started from there.
And we've had a few instances ourselves where we've stumbled across them without actually looking for them.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's really good. We're enjoying it. It's a good family thing to do. Good for exercise because we're all lazy buggers. So.
Gives everyone a chance to get out and have some fun.
That's exactly right.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. Thank you.
No problem.
We're with...
Paul, M-Trax.
And how are you?
Yeah, fine. Just come along as I'm new to this occasional thing. So I thought I'd get some names to faces to see how it all works here.
And how long have you been in the sport?
Well, about 4 or 5 months. I guess not that long.
Long enough to get addicted.
Well, that's right. Well, I think you only need one day to be addicted, really.
One case.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, we're one case. Is there ever such a thing as one case? I don't think so.
Once you have one, you'll never go back.
Yeah, slice of cake. You never have such a thing as one slice of cake.
Yeah. And how to get started?
Actually, I think I sort of half knew about it. By reading some outdoor magazines, they sort of occasionally mention that sort of sport. So one day I just happened to sort of get one, and I thought, a bit of a spur of the moment thing, I'll go out and get a GPS. So off I go on the net, cheapest GPS thing you can find.
Yeah. You'll never look back.
No, it's good. Like a lot of people, you always want to upgrade and that sort of thing, but I think I'll stick with my sort of equipment for the time being.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoy your day.
Yeah, you too.
Well, I'm here with Ingrid Einode. He's just won Best Photo of the ACT Cache of the Year. So Einode, what inspired you to take the photo night time at Tidnambua?
I've always been a fan of the communication station out there, and I was coming back from Southside Cache heading up Northside and decided to take the scenic route back and pick up the cache that's out there as well at the same time. Yeah, had my camera in the car and it was getting dark and the dishes were all lit up, so I thought I'd set the tripod up and do a long exposure.
Fair enough. Did it take, you just mentioned you did a long exposure, did it take long to get the perfect shot or?
No.
Pretty much came straight off?
Yeah, I've got it down, I do a lot of night photography and so it's down to pre-fine art, you set the tripod up. If you compose it right.
Yeah. How are you?
I am pretty good. I mean, I've been doing caching, I guess, on and off for the last probably about 2-3 years by now. I originally got into this from a friend of mine called Kiwi Jam. So he's not in Canberra anymore. He's over in Europe, still doing occasional caching stuff there. In fact, I can use caching to keep track of his where he goes. It's a good way to keep track of people. It's been pretty good. So just lately been getting back into it with a few people from work. So I guess I'm just creeping my way over to the 200 mark. I've got one of the Mount Bikeroy's mega double planned for my 199th and 200.
Haven't tackled A to Z?
I have done A to Z. I'm planning on trying to camper chess and lost French tourist.
Hope you enjoy your vacation and thanks very much.
Well, that's just about all we have time for in GeoTalk for this episode. Before I go, you might recall that we discussed the topic of micros a few weeks ago, and I ran a poll on the Geocaching Australia website, and the results were fairly interesting. Nearly 100 respondents, 25% said there were way too many of them, 35% said just a little too many, 20% said on the right side, and 5% said give me more. So interesting results there. Now in the next episode of GeoTalk, it'll be part 2 of Wheelchair Geocaching. We'll preview the Hunter Valley geocaching event, which will be happening just after Easter. And in future episodes, looking at the topics of earth caches, which has been getting a lot of discussion in the forums both in Australia and overseas, and waymarking. Is it the next big thing, or is it just a waste of time? Now if you've got any feedback about the episodes or about GeoTalk in general, don't forget to drop a comment on the website at geotalk.libsyn.com or send an email to geotalk@mac.com. Until next time, safe geocaching.